very good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world. And thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are currently listening to On The Radar, your trusted source for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments from across Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, this isn't just about the headlines. Well, On The Radar is a space for deep, meaningful engagement where we interrogate the stories shaping our country. We bring you the why, the what, the how, the when. We ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the data, the dots, pardon me, using archived audio, expert opinion, and sharp analysis. Now, from major policy decisions to grassroots realities, we bring you the full picture. Our interviews are long form and in-depth as well, because some stories actually deserve more than sound bites, so you can understand what's going on behind what's actually being said. Now, we come prepared with the facts, the context, and your questions, so that every conversation takes us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath, what truly lies beyond the words that are being spoken. Now, remember, On The Radar is available every Monday to Friday right here on Eagle FM from 1300 hours up until 1430, and is available through our Eagle FM's national radio frequencies, Eagle FM website, as well as Eagle FM Facebook page. And don't forget to download the Eagle FM app so that you can listen to us wherever you may be, whether in your vehicle or in your way home or perhaps just at home. Don't forget also to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, where we deliver to you real-time updates, interview highlights, and exclusive clips, so that you can also stay in on the loop on what's making headlines, whether socially, economically, or community-related stuff. Now, do stay with us as we step beyond the surface. This is On The Radar, when Namibia comes to interrogate, come to think, come to analyze, and also ask the questions and answer the questions. And for now, let's get into today's analysis. The Southern African Development Communities, also known as SADC, Public Service Commission's Forum, officially commenced its general meeting in Windhoek yesterday. Now, the three-day event taking place from the 14th to the 16th of July 2025, brings together representatives from public service commissions across the SADC region to foster regional cooperation and improve public service delivery. Now, the forum serves as a vital platform for member states to share best practices, address mutual challenges, and craft collaborative strategies aimed at strengthening public administration. Central to this year's discussions are key themes such as professionalizing the public sector, promoting ethical leadership, and advancing innovation in service delivery. Now, by hosting the forum, Namibia reaffirms its commitment to regional integration and effective governance. The country's public service leadership emphasized the importance of cooperation in building resilient, transparent, and citizen-focused public institutions throughout the SADC region. Delegates are expected to adopt key recommendations that will inform policy development and enhance institutional capacity across member states. The outcomes of the meeting are anticipated to contribute significantly to the harmonizing of governance standards and the promotion of sustainable development through improved public service systems. Now, in regards to Namibia's Public Service Commission, also known as PSC, the Public Service Commission of Namibia is a constitutionally mandated, independent, and impartial institution tasked with advising the president and government on matters relating to the public service. Now, its role is focused on providing guidance on appointments, disciplinary actions, remuneration, and retirement benefits for public servants, as well as carrying out other functions assigned by law. Now, one of the commission's key responsibilities is to support the functioning and development of the public service. As you know, the public service, we have the public service where they serve us, could be schools, government hospitals, labor, just so many different ones, and we interact with them every now and then. Now, this includes offering advice on human resource management, contributing to decisions around salary structures and retirement packages, and participating in the appointment of an appointment and discipline of certain categories of public servants. Now, the PSC, or the Public Service Commission, also plays, pardon me, the PSC also plays a role in promoting the application of laws and regulations governing the public service, and the Commission supports efforts to enhance efficiency, accountability, and professional conduct within the public service. It encourages a culture of service delivery, or is supposed to encourage a culture of service delivery that aims to be responsive to the needs of the public while fostering inclusivity and diversity. Now, capacity building initiatives are also part of the Public Service Commission's mandate, with a focus on training and supporting public servants to improve service delivery. In addition, the Public Service Commission participates in regional initiatives and forums, such as the SADC Public Service Commission Forum, like the one being held today and tomorrow, yesterday, to share experiences and strengthen collaboration on public service management across the region and across countries, across SADC. And now, as Namibia hosts the 2025 general meeting of the SADC Public Service Commission Forum, the Public Service Commission continues to engage with its regional counterparts to exchange knowledge and explore approaches to public sector forum. Now, speaking at the event is Somadoda Thikini, who is the chairperson of the Public Service Commission of South Africa and also the chairperson of the Public Service Commission SADC Forum. Let's take a listen to Somadoda Thikini, what key points he actually spoke at the event. And after what, we'll look at them, analyze them, discuss them, ask the questions, and also our studio line will also be open for you. For now, let's take a listen to him.
One of us given a responsibility here either has a letter of appointment or assignment. It has a starting date and an ending date. Either as a commissioner or a secretary. Generations to come will ask a simple question. When given that opportunity, what did you do and what legacy did you leave behind? If you have no legacy that you can point to, you'll only have a vacancy that you leave behind. And that in itself is the challenge that is facing us, to say we hold these positions not because sometimes we're the best and the brightest, but because fate and fortune has favored us to take this responsibility at this time. And the second point I want to say, of course, I would have coined the same quotation that my brother Jacobs has cited from Franz Fanon. We didn't compare notes when he said, just to paraphrase, every generation must discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. It is that historic mission that brought us together as SADC commissions of the public service or civil service or ombuds or public sector to say, let's formalize our collaboration. And that is what brought us to where we are today. We were very happy when Namibian delegation came and we compared notes, and we said, in fact, in our strategy session as South Africa in 2021 September, we had agreed that SADC should be the base of mobilizing the region so that we can deepen collaboration. And they said we were discussing the same idea that SADC should collaborate closer. And it is therefore fitting that Namibia is hosting us for this second meeting, because it ought not to be any project for one country. The spirit of co-creation, the spirit of equity amongst us, rotation itself provides that footprint. So we're very happy, Namibia, and please do convey to the leadership of the country that Namibia has shown up again when history called upon Namibia to show up. We know it was going to be difficult dealing with transition and also hosting. We do know that Mauritius had also raised its hand to say in future, considered. We do know that Kingdom of Eswatini, my brother Mamba, was also very keen at the very foundation of the idea to say Eswatini is also thinking about having this common forum. So as we gather here, we gather to do just a few things which are practical and pointed. But before we do that, we should remember that performance of any state, any country, is measured mainly through the quality of its public service. Because on a daily basis, whether in a municipality or in a department, people receive service through the frontline staff members, through the back office staff members. Therefore, if ever you wanted to fix anything in statecraft, you must make sure that you have a professional, capable, ethical, competent public service. Most of the time we failed as Africans and other countries around the world because we often think talking about economic growth or talking about improving tourism, talking about implementing some of the international conventions will in itself make those to happen. But the reality is that you must first fix the engine, which is the enabler, your public service. Whether you want to improve service delivery, or you want to fight crime, or you want to improve your investment conditions, or you want to fulfill your obligations such as your International Continental Free Trade Agreement, it all depends on how you have fixed the engine called public service or public administration. There's no other way you can bypass that. A country like Belgium, where in Europe they always prone to coalition arrangements, went on for 352 days without any government, but the state was able to perform its function because it had a capable, professional public service. And on top of that, public service is, in many countries, if in not all, the largest employer. So it is very much important that we bear that in mind as we meet here. A year ago, we came together in Cape Town, as program director said, the place where the two oceans meet. We wanted now to have SADC to meet and consider the formation of this SADC Public Service Forum. And that, in principle, we agreed. And in that meeting, we assigned each other, and we also assigned the interim executive many tasks which we've been performing. And we've come to this General Assembly to report back and say this is how far we've gone. Let's guide each other on the next step. I also want to say one of the most important decisions we took there was to say, how do we institutionalize this new entity, both in terms of its institutional arrangement, the concept, the framework, how it's going to operate, but also in terms of how we align ourselves to the processes of SADC. And at the time, Angola was the chairperson of SADC, and they were very positive about this particular step. And Zimbabwe was on the threshold of taking over the chairpersonship. And that in itself, the positive attitude of Angola was much appreciated because it gave us a head start. Obrigado. Muerte obrigado. Then Zimbabwe came in to do the heavy lifting under my brother, Dr. Hungwe, working with a relentless team which was led in Victoria Falls Ministerial Committee meeting of the Labor and Employment Ministers of SADC by Ambassador Manzoi. The work, the lobby, day and night was quite impressive. At the time, I'd come from very heavy assignments and I would go to the hotel and hope I'll take a nap. Every 15 minutes, they knock and say another countries are available, let's go talk to them. The labor is now ready, let's go talk to them. Every hour, the documents that were needed. So, my brother, chairperson of Zimbabwe, the heavy lifting that you have done with your secretariat has literally given wind beneath the wings of this forum. And we will always be grateful. And he was meeting with the president. He was meeting with every other key person. The Minister of Employment and Labor was there throughout the period. And that in itself showed that indeed this particular project has the support of SADC in many respects, and we will be getting that report as to what the next step is. And for that, I would like us to. Then my brother, who is the chair of Zambia, who was the chairperson of the continental body, was so instrumental in introducing us to this continental body, APSCOMS, which was being revived after COVID disrupted it. And he was very much instrumental coming from SADC in opening the doors and telling us how that system works together with his secretariat. And as such, SADC provided the largest delegation in that conference, and everything that was taking place in that conference looked at SADC for leadership. And for that, my brother, we really, really thank you. We will continue that particular journey. So strong was the SADC region and the most organized in that meeting that were able, one, to support Kenya because this had to rotate with our numbers. And then SADC had its own vice president as they are appointed as per regions. But then we did something else beautiful. Since Tanzania is both in East Africa and Southern Africa, and it belongs to both, we put our support behind Tanzania to say it would be the vice president for East Africa. And that's the work of this particular forum. And for that, we really appreciate the work that was done in that meeting. So the work that faces us, and the first prize, is simply to make sure that we collaborate as the oversight and accountability bodies of public service in order to improve our efficiency and our effectiveness, in order to upscale our uptake of technologies which are being used to improve effectiveness. It is also to collaborate in mobilizing resources, in training, in exchange programs. And that is key, as we have discussed. For example, to develop a new customized software for e-recruitment, for performance management, can be very expensive. But when we compare notes and say, I've already developed one system, it is working in this form, you can fashion it for your own country. That in itself is one of the benefits of this particular forum. And we're not doing it just for ourselves. We're doing it so that we provide effective leadership in the professionalization of our respective commissions, to make sure that they are people-centered, they are development-oriented, and they are service-oriented. But for that to happen, commissioners themselves or ombudsmen will have to be given training to capacitate themselves. Will also have to be given strategic foresight, abilities to anticipate what is happening ahead. This, we think, is possible. We will be reporting on the work we've already done, meeting with different countries and with different potential funders to that effect. As we approached SADC in Victoria Falls, we were very clear that our association with SADC is not to add yet another agency under SADC in order to increase their budget, because that we will mobilize resources independently. Our main aim is to make sure that SADC, AU, and all other forums understand that building a capable, ethical, developmental public service or public administration should be at the heart of any of the themes forums that they have. We've raised the same thing with the G20 to say, let's not mention it in passing, let it be a focal point. This is possible because SADC in Africa is probably the most integrated and the most united region by far.
And there you had it from Somadoda Fikeni, who is the chairperson of the Public Service Commission South Africa and the chairperson of the Public Service Commission SADC Forum. Now, key points that Somadoda actually spoke there that I do appreciate is that he says the performance of any state or of any country is measured through its public service. The performance of any state or country, for those of us who refer to our country as a country and not as a state, is measured through its public service. Indeed, how the public themselves, public service servants themselves deliver service to the country at large or to the people, to the population of the country, measures is how it can, how a performance of that state can be measured on how good they are or how slow or inefficient it is. And he also points out that most times Africa has failed because talks are not centered on public service delivery, which is the engine of the country, but talks are rather centered around other things such as investment, such as, you know, all those good things that are very good. Talks should be around that. But I think in every talk and in a, perhaps in every engagement that brings high level people on the table, it should, Public Service Commission should be, you know, integrated in that, because at the end of the day, we can talk about what we are going to do, how we are going to do it. But if we are not going to talk about delivery itself on when and how efficient and the people who are going to be on ground, then everything else might actually go very slowly. And the results that we'll be expecting in a very quick time, or the results that should be expected in a very short time will now be delayed. And that's why you find something that ought to be have been implemented in 6 months now takes 1 year, 6 months, you know, because who is actually holding them accountable when it comes to public service delivery? Now, another point also that is that a professional public service is the largest employer in many countries. And it is true in our country that public service is the largest employer in Namibia. And therefore, capacity building and training of public service servants needs to be continuous. Now, there's something that I've come to realize is that in the health sector, of course, they do take a portion of some and train them. And also other sectors of health also, there are parts where you have to gain points, which means you have to go for training. And it's a must because you are being tracked by the governing body or by the guidance body. But then is that the same for other sectors as well? Are there training capacities that are a must for public servants for them to continuously be on the loop or on the know-how of what's happening, of what's on ground? Is that something that is being done, or is it that a particular person, of course, graduated 15 years ago and of course has been working for this past 15 years, and of course experience comes in with that, but how are they being trained to be in on the loop on what's happening now, on the equipment that is currently being used, on that which is actually being put in place? Are they just still behind? They don't know that there's now new things that are coming in. I mean, AI is being integrated in almost everything that we're doing now. Are they able to use it, and how are they able to use it? Is their mindset also open to say, can I incorporate this? Or they are still in the old way of doing things, especially in health, where you get, of course, there are certain things that some had been trained to say, this is how you do it, a certain procedure. But as years go by and research also takes place, some people researchers tend to notice that, wait, this form is actually outdated now, or this medication is actually outdated, or this medication should not be used in conjunction with this particular medication because it will have certain side effects that will now show up in the patient. How are those public servants being actually trained or being kept in the know-how of what needs to be done. And another thing also that Soma Doda actually pointed out is e-recruitment. You know, something I believe the Public Service Commission or is looking at. E-recruitment or service assessment, you know, via online, which he said is very expensive, yes. But collaboration will help reach the goal. You know, if obviously the SADC, every public service commission of every country within SADC comes together, they now together can come up with e-recruitment or e-service assessment, and that will really help. Imagine I go to the hospital and I get, sorry for the word, I get the crappiest service for going to that service. I can now, for that hospital, I can now be sitting at the comfort of my house and actually be able to report and say, nurse, gave me so treatment and it wasn't so good. Or perhaps I go to a particular ministry and the service delivery is delaying for so long, perhaps for months on, instead of me continuously having to go to a particular office or having to travel all the way from a rural area to come to town or to come to the city just to report an incident that happened at regional level. I can now actually be able to do it through e-service assessment, you know, something, because I mean, we are moving digitally now. These are things that perhaps that needs to be put in place in regards to it. So I really do appreciate how he talks about e-recruitment and e-service assessment, but that it's very expensive, but that collaboration will actually help the countries to be able to bring it on board. Now, I also say that commissioners themselves or ombudsmen would need to receive training to be able to equip them, and also training to be able to anticipate or foresee challenges, and not only just foresee them, but also on how to address them and eliminate them. So you can see now, and also myself, I'm beginning to realize that indeed Public Service Commission is something that is tasked with so much and yet is overlooked. Even myself, I didn't really see much of it. Okay, Public Service Commission. But now, as you actually look and listen to the pointers that are being discussed, you begin to realize that, hey, hold on. For us to be actually to be able to measure whether the country is moving forward, we need to look at public service delivery. How are those in the public sector delivering service? How are you as a public service employee, or what you call public service servant, delivering service to your fellow countrymen? Are you really doing in the capacity that you ought to be doing? Are you really doing as much as you ought to be doing? Or are you just reluctant and not actually giving that which you're supposed to do? Because I mean, who is actually there to point fingers and say that which you're doing is not actually right? Now, with that being said, our studio line is also very much open for you to come through. 081-288-401 is the number in studio. And I repeat that, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Please come through and air your opinions and contributions. Perhaps you're a public service servant and you would like to share with us what are some of the key pointers that you think should be put in place, be addressed for you, in order for you to be able to deliver the service to your fellow men as efficiently as you ought to do. Of course, after we do return, we'll be looking at the loopholes in Namibia's public service commission that we think need to be addressed. With that being said, I'll see you after the commercial break.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe bali heari, nola natu heari bali no heari. Ile ko berewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We're still talking about the Public Service Commission Forum that is being held in Windhoek from the 14th to the 16th of July 2025. Now, looking at Namibia's Public Service Commission, of course, Namibia's Public Service Commission plays a crucial role in ensuring merit-based recruitment, fair employment practices, and ethical governance across public institutions. However, several loopholes, both systemic and operational, can undermine its effectiveness. Now, let's look at an overview of some of these loopholes and how they can actually be addressed. Now, number one is the lack of independence and political interference. The Public Service Commission is not fully independent from political structures, which can lead to biased decision-making, patronage, or politicization of appointments. And the solution to this could be to strengthen constitutional and legislative safeguards to insulate the Public Service Commission from political influence, and also to ensure that appointments to the Public Service Commission are based on merit, right, and subject to parliamentary approval or independent venting panels, and not necessarily based on political affiliation. Also to establish a tenure protection for commissioners, so the commissioners themselves are actually protected. Now, another pointer is that weak enforcement of merit-based recruitment. Now, despite policies promoting a merit-based recruitment, political connections or favoritism may override qualifications and experience. And some of the solutions to this could be to digitalize and standardize recruitment processes in order to increase transparency. Okay. Instead of just appointments or just hearing that so-so-so-so has been appointed, how about we actually make it available? You know, the recruitment process is made available, and so that this will increase transparency, and also we will also be able to judge to say candidate B actually got the post because they had so-so-so qualifications or they had so-so-so experience over candidate C and A. Also, as well as to implement a third party that needs to audit or oversight mechanisms for high-level appointments. Imagine if we had an independent third-party audit that can just look at the high-level appointments, you know, such as an oversight mechanisms that are just there to look at those appointments. You know, that way, those appointees that perhaps have certain pending corruption cases, for instance, stuff that perhaps that they have done in the past and it's still pending, you know, has not been finalized and they've not been acquitted guilty or not guilty. That's not something that is going to be overlooked. Why? Because there's a third party that is auditing. There's a third party that is overseeing mechanisms of high level appointments. Another point is solution to this would be to introduce a complaints or appeal mechanism for aggrieved applicants. You know, for instance, now we are appointing a particular person and this person is going to be overseeing a particular area. But then this person also is known for certain aggrievances towards the people that is going to oversee. Now, if there is an introduction of complaints or appeals mechanism whereby people or the public can be able to say, hey, no, let's actually override this, or this person shouldn't be appointed because A, B, and C, for reason A, B, and C. And of course, they also have to be valid reasons. And some reasons are actually valid. Imagine a whole community of people coming and saying, for this and this and reason. And then actually that appointment gets to be overrided. Will the people who then were supposed to be served by this person not be very happy? They would be. Now, another thing also can be inadequate capacity and resourcing. Now, the Public Service Commission may lack the resources, the finance, the human, the technical resources to monitor compliance, to carry out investigations, or to evaluate performance effectively. Now, a solution to this could be to increase budgetary allocation to the Public Service Commission and invest in capacity building programs. Very important. Invest in capacity building programs in order for the people on the ground, on the level, whether at regional level, at local level, can get the training that is necessary in order to be able to serve the people efficiently and effectively and deliver the service that is needed by the people. It is only when such resources are in place and people can actually go to grassroots level that many will be able to find out that, hold on, there are certain things that need to be done in this particular area or in this particular village that has not been put in place. And not only village, but also the city itself. Now also, to develop digital tools for monitoring recruitment and personnel performance across ministries. Like I said previously, to say not just, and of course the first one was to see if I have a complaint, I can be at the sitting, I can be in my house at the comfort of my home and actually lodge this complaint through an e-assessment or, you know, but now in terms of recruitment, where a digital platform has been developed in order to be able to monitor recruitment, you know, and as well as to look at personal performance. How are the public servants themselves performing across all ministries? Not just one ministry, but across all ministries. How are they performing? Regardless of whether it's in the health ministry, it's in the labor ministry, justice ministry, all ministries. Agriculture ministry, how actually are they performing? Education ministries, how are they performing? Especially now with, in regards to recruitment, a lot of people, of course, are unhappy. Imagine having to apply so many, posts in the government. And all of a sudden you see somebody that you grew up with in the same village who didn't, or in the same town, who didn't actually merit, you know, that position that they got. They came out with so few points in grade 12, didn't even go up to advance their education. All of a sudden, they have this particular post. And of course, you know, it's not coming out of envy, but it's coming out of reality of what's on ground to say, how do we actually monitor this? How do we, as the public, if we have any complaints, if we have any grievances, how do we actually come in? Where do we actually go? And if we are to go to the ombudsman, is the ombudsman going to be, does it attend to everybody else's? Pardon me. Sorry, does it attend to everybody else's grievances? Now, further loopholes could be also limited transparency and accountability with Public Service Commission decisions and reports not always being made public or communicated clearly. This reduces accountability. So one of the solutions could be that to require the Public Service Commission to publish annual reports, recruitment statistics, and investigation outcomes, as well as use online portals to track applications, job posting, and appeal processes, as well as strengthen parliamentary oversight through regular review of public service performance. Also, poor handling of grievances and disciplinary cases, delays and inconsistency in addressing misconduct or workplace grievances reduce trust in the Public Service Commission's ability to ensure fairness. Now, they could set clear timelines and procedures for resolving complaints and establish an independent disciplinary tribunal for public servants. Also train HR officers across the public service on grievance handling. Let's now pause here for a short commercial break and we'll be back.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. We're still talking about Public Service Commission, and this has been triggered by the fact that Namibia is hosting the Public Service Commission Forum for SADC that started yesterday and will commence up until tomorrow. Now, several African countries have made notable progress in public service delivery, particularly in areas such as healthcare, education, infrastructure, and digital governance. Namibia is also moving towards that digital governance. Now, while challenges remain across the continent, the following countries are often cited as examples of relatively strong or improving public service system. One of being Rwanda, with the strengths of efficient governance and anti-corruption measures with the use of technology to deliver government services online and strong central coordination under Vision 2050 and the National Strategy for Transformation. With that, what impact that had on their country? Well, is quick response in healthcare and digitalized civil registration services and strong performance in primary education and health indicators. And another country is Botswana, with the strength of stable democracy with a professional civil service. And what I have come to notice under President Duma Boko, I've come to see that the people of Botswana are very happy with the way Duma Boko himself is doing stuff and the way things are going. And as I've also come to see myself, the way he's also very vocal about the promises that he has made, especially in terms of delivering houses or homes to a lot of Botswana people. Now, also, one of their strengths is transparent recruitment and promotion in the public sector with strong public financial management and rule of law. What impact this had on Botswana is high literacy rate. You know, I think it's very much underrated that Botswana people are very literate. Well, if very good literature, have very good literature. Now, they have efficient tax collection and a steady delivery of public health as well as education services. Another country is Mauritius, which has with strength of high quality e-government services as well as civil service and strong institutional frameworks, integrated public service systems and performance management. This has had an impact on their country, which being Mauritius being among the best public health and education systems in Africa, and it's ranked highly in governance, ease of doing business and human development. Ghana, on the other side, has strength of decentralized public service delivery systems, improved education and health sector reforms, active public service commission and civil service training center with an impact of increased school enrollment rates and improved access to basic services and a rollout of national identification systems, that is Ghana Card, has improved service access. South Africa, on the other hand, has strong comprehensive public service structure with various oversight bodies and widespread delivery of basic services, as well as social grant and strong jurisdiction and constitutional guarantees for service rights, with the impact of large-scale social assistance program reaching a number of a lot of people in South Africa, and with strong health infrastructure as well, despite recent governance concerns. Now, Morocco also has a strong major investment in e-government and administrative reform, as well as public and private partnership in service delivery. One very good point of public-private partnership in service delivery. As much as we do emphasize on public service commission, of course, public and private partnership also help in strengthening the economy of a country, and it shouldn't be overlooked. It should never be overlooked. When public sectors are making decisions on the table, sometimes private sectors might have the know-how and the how. They might also have the capacity. They might have the people on ground who can be able to help equip the public on how to deliver efficiently. Now, strong pointers also in Morocco, there is education, health, and infrastructure prioritized in national development plans, which has helped improve access to health services with a growing digital ID and service ecosystem. And also last on our list is Kenya, which has digital innovations and improved access to government services, as well as governance systems, which allows countries to manage local service delivery with an impact of more localized healthcare and infrastructure development and faster access to government documents and registrations online. Now, Namibia is not falling under this, but I also do want to appreciate Namibia's step towards e-governance. Yes, e-governance in terms of perhaps court, in terms of going to court, and you need a particular date, you can actually trace it down, which makes things quite easier. And of course, with time and over the years, I believe that will improve efficiently and well. Now, in regards to this countries, it's so very important to note that even in countries where relatively good public service delivery, equity and urban-rural disparities or corruption and bureaucratic inefficiencies, well, they can still exist. Now, these countries have models in terms of innovation, institutional reform, or relative stability, but not perfection. Yeah, they can still learn from other countries, and Namibia can actually learn from other countries as well. Of course, we do have our strengths that we're good at, and of course, but we also have our loopholes that we need to address. Now, I believe that this platform of today, of tomorrow, of one that happened yesterday, of one that started yesterday, continuing today and tomorrow, is platforms that are really needed for countries to come together and discuss on the challenges that they are facing, as well as to discuss on the things that they need to put in place in order to actually strengthen and promote public service delivery through the Public Service Commission. At the end of the day, it's only for the betterment of the country. Now, that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace, and we'll be then back shortly. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu batatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now, this is a part where we bring you what's making headlines today in regards to economic indicators of today. Now, in regards to economic indicators, we're starting off in South Africa, where South Africa's mining sector has rebounded slightly. Now, mining production in South Africa rose by 0.2%. over a year ago in May 2025, rebounding slightly after a sharp 7.7% decline in April and ending a 6-month streak of contraction. Now, iron ore was the biggest positive driver, rising 12.5% and contributing 1.7 percentage points. Output also increased significantly for nickel at 19.1% versus minus 21.9%. Other metallic minerals came in at 11.4% versus 16.5%, and diamonds at 7.7% versus 10%. On a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, mining output rose by 3.7% in May after a revised flat reading in the previous month. The mining production increased by 2.6% in the 3 months ended in May 2025 compared with the previous 3 months. Serbia building permits fell 9.5% year-on-year in May. The number of building permits issued in Serbia declined by 9.5% year-on-year to 2,226 in May 2025. That is, out of the total number of permits issued, 85.8% were for buildings and 14.2% for civil engineering works. Among building permits, 81.7% were for residential structures and 18.3% for non-residential. As for civil engineering, the majority, which is 73.5%, were for pipelines, communication and power lines. Meanwhile, new construction works accounted for 84.7% of the total anticipated value. Europe natural gas features to 35 euros as stable supply from Norway and steady demand helped claim the market. Now, President Trump's 50-day ultimatum to Russia reduced fears of immediate supply shocks, though uncertainty may rise as the deadline aligns with Norway's seasonal maintenance starting late August. Meanwhile, a heat wave in North Asia is driving up gas demand, causing LNG cargoes to divert from Europe. Now, this raises concerns about a potential supply squeeze
as Europe works to build winter reserves. EU gas storage is around 62% full, below normal levels. Now, warmer weather in parts of Europe is also lifting cooling demand, though forecasts suggest a return to average temperatures later in July, which may ease consumption. Now, still, upside in prices remains limited due to concerns about global economic growth fueled by Trump's escalating tariffs. Meanwhile, Poland's annual inflation rate was confirmed at 4.1% in June 2025. That is matching the initial estimate and accelerating slightly from 4.0% in the previous month. The uptick was primarily driven by faster price increases in communication at 4.4% versus 2.8% in May, alcoholic beverages and tobacco at 6.7% versus 6.3%, and restaurant and hotels at 6.0% versus 5.9%, along with weaker deflation in transport at minus 6.0% versus minus 7.2%. In contrast, the increase was partially offset by slower price increases in food and non-alcoholic beverages at 4.9% versus 5.5%, housing and utilities at 10.5% versus 10.6%, health at 4.6% versus 4.9%. Now, on a monthly basis, consumer prices edged up 0.1% in June, confirming preliminary estimates and rebounding from a 0.2% drop in May. And that's what we had for you today in regards to economic indicators. Let's now pause here, and when we do return, we shall be bringing you news beyond the borders. Our studio line is also very much open for you to come through and air your opinions, perhaps on what we have been speaking about today in regards to Public Service Commission, and also just looking closer at home at the Public Service Commission in here in Namibia. Studio line is open. 0832888401 is the number in studio. I repeat it just for you to get clarity on it, and be sure that you dial in and air your opinion. For now, let's pause here. I'll be back shortly.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Shift off. Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders. You are tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, we're starting off in South Africa, as we do start off regionally. Then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect international news.
Now, in regards to the G20 South Africa, Treasury, SARB, are hosting the finance track meetings in Durban. Let's take a listen.
Focus, though, to this story. G20 finance track meetings take place this week in Durban. The meetings are being co-hosted by South Africa's Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana, and the Governor of the South African Reserve Bank, Lesedi Ganyaho, together with their respective deputies. Some of the issues dealt with by this track are global economic outlook and debt sustainability for low-income countries. We're joined now by Deputy Governor Dr. Rashad Kassim to tell us more about these meetings.
Good afternoon, Doctor. Thank
you very much for joining us on the program. Now, the meetings come at a time when there's uncertainty in the global economy. What discussions are expected to take place in addressing some of these issues?
So, you know, there's never a good time when you host the G20. There are always issues and that we have to deal with. But I think that the G20, as you know, represents about 85% of the world's output. And it's really a consensus-driven organization where nothing is binding, but it provides a unique forum for coordination. So not surprisingly, typically what happens at these meetings, as is happening in Zimbabwe today in the next few days, is we sit around the table and discuss the conjuncture. How is uncertainty impacting on the global growth, our global growth prospects? How is uncertainty impacting on inflation? How can we resolve uncertainty so that there's more predictability in economic policy? So obviously that will be an important discussion, but there are other ongoing discussions around how can we improve, as you said in your opening comments, debt distress. How can we improve cross-border payments? Many of these issues are issues that have continued from the Brazilian presidency and previously the Indian presidency.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would be your submissions around the debt? Because debt in developing countries is mounting. Many leaders have lamented this reality of a large portion of the country's GDPs being allocated to servicing external debt, which ultimately hinders development and social progress in most of these countries. So what would be South Africa's contributions to this conversation around this longstanding issue of unsustainable debt?
So the G20 is a relay process. We take over the work done by many other countries on how to improve dialogue on debt. Minister Enoch Godongwana has set up an Africa panel chaired by Minister Trevor Manuel, previously Minister of Finance Trevor Manuel. We just came out from a very interesting discussion to take a really comprehensive approach to Africa's debt problems. That is, the cost of capital, the cost of raising finance, the nature of capital markets, how we can bring to the attention the impact of global regulation that may impact on the ability to raise financing. So what South Africa is doing is taking a comprehensive approach, putting it on the agenda, elevating the issues. And from here, we'll see various actors coming together and taking, resolving this issue, which will not be resolved overnight.
Mm-hmm. Now, Deputy, I want to take you back to our initial conversation, the first question around the global economic uncertainty. Many would argue that, of course, it's brought about by political developments, the decisions that many countries take, superpowers, if you will. So one assumes that the conversation will also somehow join in with political developments because they do to a certain extent, or political actors do to a certain extent, impact the economic results or economic outcomes of the globe. So to what extent will the conversations around political actors or politics dominate these discussions?
So obviously, you know, the ministers of finance and central bank governors like to stay in their lanes. Some of the highly politicized discussions take place at the Sherpa track. And more importantly, will culminate in the heads of state summit. But you are right. We cannot ignore the impact of these conflicts on the economies. So our role as the finance track is to kind of say there are few conflicts, there are wars going on, uncertainty from tariff policies. Our role is to kind of highlight how these impact on the prospects of the global economy and to kind of send the signal to the politicians about how this should be fixed, because the consequences of these not being ratified could be dire in a world where growth is slowed down anyway. And as you know, South Africa's growth is partly dependent on domestic factors, but also the global economic conditions.
Doctor, sounds like it's a very, very going to be an insightful conversation, very robust discussions there. Thank you very much for joining us on the program. That is South African Reserve Bank Deputy Governor Dr. Rashad Kassim speaking to us on the G20 finance track meetings that are currently taking place in Durban.
Still in South Africa, we're speaking on manufacturing in Durban in sandstone to tackle Africa's production deficit. Let's take a listen.
Take you to Sandton, because the manufacturing in Durban is kicking off there with a focus on localized production in Africa. The continent is home to about 15% of the world's population and abundant resources, yet it contributes only around 3% to global manufacturing. Watching developments for us there is SABC News reporter Diabo Sito, who joins us now live from Sandton. And Diabo, I suppose amongst the many questions that are going to be asked is how we can fix this dynamic, a continent so rich in the raw mineral resources, contributing so little to global manufacturing.
Absolutely, Ayanda, good morning. This is definitely going to be taking center stage, especially on the back of those tariffs that were announced by the U.S. last week. Of course, they're only kicking in on the first.
But the resounding comments around industry players
is that this is the time to be looking for new markets
and looking for the three colors of the USAVE logo. Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.
Okay, pardon me for that. And now let's resume on manufacturing in Durban and Sandton that is meant to tackle Africa's production deficit.
With the critical minerals that the continent is endowed with, to what extent will we use that as leverage? 3% of contribution to global GDP is very small when you look at the size of the economy. But in South Africa, it is 13%, but it could be higher when you track back to around 2008, 2009, when the sector lost about 1 million jobs. It has never really regained those jobs back. We also saw different challenges such as the energy challenges, you know, pushing the sector back. And if you are a regular consumer of business news, you'll know that we talk a lot about the Purchasing Managers Index, which tracks manufacturing activity. And APSA releases that. And just recently, it has rebounded back to about 5.4 index points. But it is still, not quite above the 50 index points that we want, which normally indicates expansion. When it's below 50, it indicates contraction. But I've invited Mr. Session Shandadev. He is a manufacturing expert within APSA, just to give us an insight about how they see it, because they fund a lot of these manufacturers, and they would know what is on the mind of manufacturing companies. Session, thank you so much for your time and your patience. It's been a very, very interesting time since last week. I just want to get straight into the whole tariffs thing. There's talk about how tariffs, are going to be impacting different industries, especially the manufacturing industries. Well, the other players who say, look, it's not going to be easy to get new markets, because getting new markets is not like you wake up tomorrow and you start selling at a particular market. But how do we do this in a way that benefits the African continent?
Diabo, I think, hi, thank you very much. So Diabo, I think it's important that we take a little bit of a step back, right? So from a manufacturing perspective, it's very positive. You mentioned the numbers. It's a positive uptick. The output numbers were also out, and we were, 0.5% up year on year in May, coming out of a 6.4% decline year on year in April. So I think it's a, for us, it's a very good story. I think the headwinds in the manufacturing sector have been quite dry for over the last 6 months. States. And the tariffs was something that really, you know, when the announcement came, we even found a slight decline in our BER survey, right? However, I think it's important that we from the time these announcements have been hitting the headlines, manufacturers have started to rethink their businesses, started to rethink, you know, how do we build resilience? How do we make sure that we take cost out of our business? How do we make sure that we become more efficient? How do we start looking at new African markets? I think so the Africa Free Trade Agreement is something, a free trade area is something that we need to be thinking about as well. So the manufacturers have taken a little bit of a you know, time to regroup and understand. The manufacturing sector by nature has been very resilient. You've mentioned some of the challenges that have come through, you know, the load shedding and all of that. So building resilience in the operations is essentially what they'd be looking to do. From the tariff specifically, I think so. Not all of the subsectors will be heavily impacted, and I think, you know, understand from the automotive sector, that will probably be the one that's most heavily hit. And then in South Africa, the agriculture sector, right? So I think essentially those are the businesses now are starting to reshape and realign to what the global trade lines will be. And being the resilient kind of sector that they are, we'll find a way through this.
Yeah. As a bank, you obviously see the needs of the manufacturers, and some of them would be original equipment manufacturers or whoever they may be. When they come and look for funding to you, do they say that, you know, they want to expand into the rest of Africa, or what exactly are they looking for funding from? Are they even coming for funding these days?
Yeah, look, I think so here's the thing, right? As a bank, it's important for us to be partners with our customers, right? And we're walking the journey. So we need to be cognizant of what's happening and what are the headwinds that they're currently facing. So in the market currently, and, you know, the headwinds that have been for the last 6 months, we're typically, you know, cost intensive. So what we have to do from a manufacturer, it's how do you manage that cash flow cycle? How do you be there at the time of real need? And so working capital, cash flow management, that's essentially where we need to play and needed to come to the party and really help them. When we're talking about expansion, so if you think about some of our OEMs, strategy has always been there. It's very much a right-hand market. I'm going to be going into Europe. I'm going to be going into the rest of Africa. That's essentially where I play. So I'm fairly comfortable. But the other kind of dimension that we need to be thinking about is how do you build there's a green and a climate consciousness that needs to come in. And how do you build that into the operation? And I think that's actually the next frontier in the manufacturing sector in Africa now, right? So how do you build that reduce the carbon emissions and increase your environment consciousness in your business? And there's various different types of things you could do to get there.
Yeah. Speaking about
Tanzania promotes forgotten crops to fight hunger.
Bambara bean, finger millet, sesame, spider plant, and amaranth were once sidelined crops in Tanzania. Now, they are seen as key to addressing hunger and malnutrition.
I now call on all citizens, as these are our crops. We must now give them more attention. These organic seeds and crops have tremendous nutritional, ecological, environmental, and economic benefits.
Recent reports show that over 30% of East Africans experience food insecurity. In Tanzania, challenges like climate change and overdependence on a few major staples have left many families vulnerable. But in places like Lindi, change is underway.
My family is seeing the benefits, and I share this improved nutritional knowledge. My family now is even healthier due to this form of agriculture.
Those behind the country's crop diversification effort say 4 years of research and training is starting to bear fruit.
We did farmer training. We started seed banks with the farmers. But we also added value to these crops that were harvested.
Still, challenges remain. Scaling up production, improving market access, and shifting public perception towards these traditional crops.
As Tanzania turns to its roots for answers to food insecurity, this new push to revive neglected crops could hold the key for better nutrition for millions. The plan is to scale up the project to more regions and districts to create a more resilient agricultural future, not just for Tanzania, but the whole East African region. Daniel Kijo, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Meanwhile, Nigeria is urged to revamp meat supply in order to boost its food security.
Kabiru Badamasi has been in the livestock business for nearly two decades. Through his company, Meat Villa, he breeds and supplies meat. He processes 3 to 20 bulls daily and has already sold over 1,000 this year. But he still loses some customers who prefer imports, blaming poor local processing standards.
The meat shopping system in Nigeria is being discouraged by the meat production style. If you go to virtually 90% of Nigerian abattoirs, you become a vegetarian. You won't even want to eat meat because of how meats are handled.
Despite strong livestock capacity in Nigeria, Mali and Botswana, West Africa still depends on meat imports. Nigeria alone has over 19 million cattle, but poor infrastructure, lack of adequate feed and open grazing limit output. It's driving up costs and making imports more attractive.
If you looked at what happened in the last Salah, the rams were going as high as 1.5 million for a ram. 750,000 for a ram. Now, what was it? Why was it like that? It was because of the cost of the foreign exchange. They were importing the rams from across the border, Mauritania, Chad, Niger, that they spend CFA, or they use CFA as a currency.
Nigeria's new livestock ministry aims to boost production, but output still trails demand, and modern abattoirs are rare. Many wealthier Nigerians prefer imported meat for its cleaner processing.
The meat import bill isn't just an economic concern, it's a public health one. Experts warn that poorly regulated abattoirs increase the risk of foodborne diseases. Nigeria loses billions annually to health complications from contaminated meat, making modern slaughterhouse reforms not just necessary, but urgent.
Experts say scaling feed production, upgrading abattoirs, and using AfriExim support could shift the tide. Improved logistics and local livestock programs may reduce the $3 billion import burden. For now, producers like Badamasi are pushing for better standards to win back customers.
It's a good time to, you know, consider exploring such solutions and then empowering the citizenry with the required skill set, required support, you know, technical support and equipment support, and again, we required funding to be able to actualize our livestock food security.
Players in the livestock industry agree. West Africa has the livestock. What it needs now is the investment to match in order to build a more viable and profitable system. Kelechi Amekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
And now for international news, the U.S. threatens severe tariffs on Russia if no Ukraine deal is done within 50 days.
I'm going to take you straight to the White House. You'll see in your picture Mark Rutte, the Secretary General, sitting alongside President Trump. Let's listen in.
A friend of mine, we've become very friendly over the last number of years. We knew each other before, but Mark is the head of NATO, Mark Rutte, Secretary General of NATO. Highly respected by everybody that knows him, but in particular the European countries. They have great reliance on him, and he's done a fantastic job. And we had a tremendous meeting, I guess it's about a month ago, and I think Mark will tell you that it was really perhaps more important the date of November 5th. That was the election day. Maybe that was the most important because we've made tremendous progress together. And one of the reasons that you're here today is to hear that we are very unhappy, I am, with Russia. But we'll discuss that maybe a different day. But we're very, very unhappy with them, and we're going to be doing very severe tariffs if we don't have a deal in 50 days. tariffs at about 100%. You call them secondary tariffs. You know what that means. But today we're going to talk about something else. And as you know, we've spent $350 billion approximately on this war with Russia and Ukraine. And would like to see it end. It wasn't my war. It was Biden's war. It's not my war. I'm trying to get you out of it. And we want to see it end. And I'm disappointed in President Putin because I thought we would have had a deal 2 months ago, but it doesn't seem to get there. So based on that, we're going to be doing secondary tariffs if we don't have a deal in 50 days. It's very simple. And they'll be at 100%. And that's the way it is. That can be more simple. It's just the way it is. I hope we don't have to do it. But regardless, we are going to be we make the greatest military equipment in the world, whether it's missiles. You saw that recently in Iran, the way those planes, every single 14 bombs hit every target. Then you had the helicopter shoot a total of 30 bombs, 30 missiles, and they hit every single marker. Is that right? Every single piece, every single target. And it was, I guess, on a scale of 0 to 10, they say it was about a 15. That's how successful it was. That's how lethal it was, a word they like to use nowadays. But it was well-organized attack that people in this country wanted to do for 24 years. You know, when we had the pilots in last week, they were saying, sir, we've been practicing this for 24 years, meaning people, not them, but other people that are a little older now. But they, too, and you were the one that let us do it. But we've been practicing it 3 to 4 times a year for 22, 24 years, because they always knew they had to stop Iran from doing what they were doing, which is trying to come up with a nuclear weapon, a nuclear bomb. And we did it very successfully. And we make the best equipment, the best missiles, the best of everything. The European nations know that. And we've made a deal today, and I'm going to have Mark speak about it, but we've made a deal today where we are going to be sending them weapons and they're going to be paying for them. We, the United States, will not be having any payment made. We're not buying it, but we will manufacture it and they're going to be paying for it. Our last meeting of a month ago was very successful in that they agreed to 5%, which is more than $1 trillion a year, so they have a lot of money. And these are wealthy nations. They have a lot of money, and they want to do it. They feel very strongly about it, and we feel strongly about it, too. But we're in for a lot of money, and we don't want to do it anymore, and we can't. But we make the best, and we're going to be sending the best to NATO, and in some cases to maybe, at Mark's suggestion, if we go to Germany, where they're going to send early-on missiles, and they'll be replaced, and NATO is going to take care of it. It's going to be coordinated by NATO, and they're going to work very much with Matt Whitaker, who's right here. He's a great.
And with that being said, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadengi program brought to you by Lois Eshimi. And also don't forget to be on the lookout for our The Villager e-paper coming out tomorrow on Wednesday, so you can be in on the loop on the social and economic stories that are making headlines. Remember, it's for free. You can receive it right to your mobile app at your fingertips on 0812004144. If you send a text message, you'll be subscribed to receive your tri-weekly dose of news. Now from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day and join in again tomorrow, same time, same place on Eagle FM frequency at 1300 hours to 1434 On the Radar Analysis.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona, monika ko Eagle FM, onora esta tu imwe, bali heavy, nola natu, heari vari no heari ileko derewa bra hetatu natu vari o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.